You're listening to Sempre, the original and best SSC Napoli podcast for Pordenope around the world.
Benvenuti and ciao ragazzi, and welcome to the first episode of Season 3 of Sempre, where we have not one but two sensational Serie A matches to recap, as well as some major talking points as the club and city finally go to war with one another over the Stadio San Paolo. We'll also discuss the Ancelotti effect, touch on Dries Mertens' role this season and much more, and to help me do so, I'm joined by a roster which would make Ancelotti himself envious. First up, after what feels like ages, it's Mr. Napoli Stats himself, Ken Schifredi. Ken, welcome back, mate. How's things?
Good. It's been a month and a half or something like that since I've been on a show, which seems crazy, but feels good to be back, especially after a win, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. Good to have you. And next up, back for her second appearance on the show, we say ciao to Kirsten Schliewitz.
Ciao, ragazzi.
How are you?
A little tired, but not as tired as Rafa. We can move to him now.
We can indeed. And last, but by no means least, it is Yonkers' main man, Rafa Rispo, snoring in the background. Wakey, wakey, Rafa. Huh?
I'm all right. What? Hi, guys.
How many hours sleep is that?
That is now 2 hours and 3 seconds.
I hope you enjoyed the 3 seconds. That's good stuff, mate.
How you guys doing today?
We're all good.
Oh, good.
Especially after tonight.
Yes, tonight was a good way to show some people some stuff. You know, if you know what I mean. Napoli did their thing.
Yeah, mm-hmm. We were showing some people some stuff.
Yeah.
Well put.
Yeah. Not 1 week, but 2 weeks in a row now, you know.
Sir.
Coming back from behind, but we will touch on that because that forms part of the Ancelotti effect. So we'll just kind of briefly recap the Lazio match to kick off the season. A 2-1 win away from home. Ciro Immobile deciding he was going to bamboozle 3 Napoli defenders and score a goal on 29 minutes. Not covering themselves in glory, the defence there, guys. I mean, fair play to Immobile, he does well. And it's a tidy finish, but the defending, not the greatest.
No, not at all. I think it's a good cutback by Immobile. Just cuts back to his left, but, you know, one of my boys on the team, Albiol, just... maybe getting a little too overzealous coming over to help cover and leaves the whole middle of the park open, and Immobile just takes the middle of the field, and nothing Karnetsis can do last week on that one, I don't think.
Overzealous, that's a way of putting it. It's very nice.
How about 3 broken ankles?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know, when you think
we've got enough injury problems, Rafa. Let's not wish anymore. Eh?
No, it was Immobile. I mean, I don't know who really to blame for that. You know, the fact that the three were triple teaming Immobile, and he just like they got caught off guard with no other center back to cover him, or Immobile's just insane skill. Of like, watch what I can do, and 3 people are on me, and here you go. But you know, that's the way it was.
But then it was the main man himself, man of the moment, after having a goal disallowed only a minute or so before, Arik Milik, 2 minutes into stoppage time at the end of the first half, and the assist by Callejon, his first of the season, and Milik just taps it in, the lovely ball back across the 6-yard box, bundles it home. And then we go 1-1 each at half-time. Great finish from Arik, and it's good to see him that, you know, he didn't let his head go down after the goal was disallowed. He was straight back in there.
Yeah, I think the most important part of that goal for Milik, aside from the fact that he comes back after getting one disallowed, is that it's a high-traffic area. He's a man with, you know, 2 new knees, essentially. He knows that Acerbi is going to try to take him down, and he just goes through it and then puts the ball at a perfect spot, roof of the net. He does get bundled down in the sort of aftermath of it, but it's good to see that he wasn't tentative at all. He was ready to attack the ball, which, I think after you get injuries like that, it's important for a player like that to go into those high-traffic areas and show that he's not afraid.
And how about the ball from Insigne to Callejon? Just One of those. It's funny because when you know you watch on television, the camera's panning towards the way Insigne is running, you know, away from the box. But then Insigne just puts that incredible cross that he always finds Callejon for, you know, and the first touch from Callejon also was just mad. It was just an amazing goal.
I just think that. It was amazing also. I'm sorry, I don't really know anything genius to add to it because it was wonderful and I'm thrilled. Mostly I was thrilled that Milik opened his account in the first game. That I think will probably bode well for the season, knock on wood, as long as he stays healthy.
It was very much a statement goal. You know, I think, Kenny, you touched on it there. You know, the fact that he's got, you know, those two repaired knees. And again, even today against Milan, you've seen it. He's not afraid to go in and get rough. You know, he puts his, even he's good now for headers and things where the feet are flying. He's not afraid to get involved, which is great to see. And, you know, I think finally we're going to get, I mean, touch wood, touch everything. Find any bit of wooden furniture you can, that he's going to stay fit for the full year because key player. But then Lorenzo Insigne it was who would score what was the winning goal, 59 minutes, an assist from Alan. And I think I've seen people describing this as a Cavani-esque finish, and I can see why. Comes across him, opens his body up, right foot, top. I mean, couldn't he put it? You couldn't have placed it in the top corner any better.
Yeah, and that touch from Alan, I know Mr. Bertels on ESPN over here is going to argue that it wasn't intentional. But if you watch the replay, it's blatantly intentional, and I think that. You know, we'll touch on Alan a little bit more, I think, as we go into the next match. But a guy's got two assists in two games. And that's set up to Insigne just holds the ball up the tiniest bit. And Insigne's all by himself. And agreed, that's just a postage stamp. You know, no goalkeeper is ever going to stop that one.
I forgot that Greg Bertels is the British Maradona who, you know, doesn't get anything wrong. And criticizes everybody else for their poor touch or their poor finish or he didn't do that on purpose. So even if he didn't do it on purpose, you know, can you do that, Mr. Bertels? Have you done that in your time? I mean, I don't know too much about him, but he seems to commentate like he's Ballon d'Or winner 10 years in a row.
Well, you don't know much about it because it's Gary Bertels, but anyway.
Fine. Whatever his name is.
Makes it hard to Google him.
Bertels, that's his name.
Yeah, he is very dour. I think we talked about this on WhatsApp. I think he forms part of the world feed that goes out to all the stations because if you guys got him on ESPN, we had him here on 11 Sports. And we only used to be subjected to him in the UK whenever Sky Sports would show Coppa Italia. But we had, obviously, Serie A was on BT, so we had, like, Adam Summerton doing the commentary. Adam, if you are listening, go and work for 11 Sports, please.
We miss you.
Save us.
Yes, it'd be great to hear you in the States, too, because it's a little rough around the edges, to say the least.
Not the
putting greatest, it nicely but... again, Kenny.
Yeah, say it like it is. That's just it. So that was a great show of character against Lazio, coming back from a goal down. So we go into the first home game of the season this evening. Ancelotti making his home debut against his former captain Rino Gattuso, and things weren't going brilliantly. A goal down, Bonaventura after 15 minutes. Calabria would then give Milan a 2-0 lead 4 minutes into the second half. Again, Ospina and the defence not covering themselves in too much glory on that one. And then the comeback once again, which was... Do you know, after we got the first one back, I turned around and I says to myself, I was like, we're winning this. I just think the way we were playing from middle to front was incredible. Great pace, precision passing. The kind of football that people said wouldn't happen when Sarri left. Kenny, you've got some stats there from the game this evening as well. Some ridiculously good pass completion stats in there as well, even accounting for the loss of Jorginho.
Yeah, I mean, possession pretty much even, 50.6 for Napoli, 49.4 for Milan. The passing, though, 537 of 596, so 90% for Napoli, and 511 of 583 of 88% for Milan. And I thought Milan were pretty brave playing the ball out of the back as much as they did. It looks like they have a little bit of kinks to work out, but if they can get it together, I think they'll probably be pretty darn good this year because they were able to keep the ball away from us at certain times. Shots and created chances tell a little bit of a different story, is, you know, aside from possession. Is shots, Napoli 24 shots with 8 on target, Milan with 8 shots, 2 on target, 2 goals. Good. And chances created, Napoli 23, Milan 8. So that's the rundown on stats. You know, it's one of those matches where the first goal Milan scores, you know, I think Hisai could probably do better. You know, he created, got a little bit of let Barini get a little bit of space to cut that ball back a little bit. And but the, I'm not going to say anything about the finish from Bonaventura aside from the fact that it was great. You know, it's one of those goals out of nothing. You know, just on the volley, crazy technique. Nothing else Bina can do about it, I don't think. The second goal, for me, is a little bit less nice, I guess, for Napoli defense. I think when I watch the replay back, it looks like Insigne is kind of tracking Calabria and then just lets him run past him. And then the shot is a little bit shielded from Calabria, but I think Ospina's got to get down a little bit quicker there or a little, and just get that ball and not let that ball go past him. I thought it was a little bit of a soft one to concede, but, you know, that's pretty much my thoughts on those on Milan's goals, but I'll let everybody else chime in on Napoli's goals first.
This will probably be an unpopular opinion, but I disagree a little. I think that we left Milan a little too much space, especially deep in midfield, and I think we'll get to that a little bit later. But yeah, as much as I don't want to say it, I think we lost a little coverage in front of our defenders, and that would have helped at least probably with both. I would say with both goals.
Yeah, just to kind of touch on what you were saying there, Kenny, as well about the second goal. I do agree Ospina should be down a bit quicker, but I think he's put off, and I said this to you on WhatsApp as well, I think he's put off a little bit by Koulibaly charging across. Because it seems to go, I don't know if it goes
it
through
goes between his legs. Yeah.
And it's I mean, it's just sheer luck because Koulibaly's actually in full stride to come into the box and it just slips through his legs. So maybe Ospina's a little bit unsighted there. He must have been thinking, well, this is a shocker of a debut, this.
Yeah,
it's just like playing for Arsenal.
I feel bad for him a little bit because I don't, you know, I feel like I'm weak with the team and you're thrown into a huge match in a home debut. And, you know, he didn't have to make any save. Well, he didn't make any saves. And so you just feel a little bit bad for him. The first one, people were all over him and I didn't think there was really anything he could do about it.
No.
But,
you know, it's a work in progress. We got the win. He can at least be, you know, he could take that concession out of it that we did win. And, you know, it's one of those things that another couple of weeks of communication and, you don't know, maybe like 90 times out of 100, Koulibaly gets one of his feet to that and clears it and it's not even an issue. But sometimes Napoli has that luck, so welcome aboard, David.
I mean, he might be a little relieved, too, to realize that this is a Napoli team that can do that. And, you know, that pressure might ease off a little. Yeah.
Well, then it was the Petrar Zielinski show. Two relatively quick-fire goals. Typical Zielinski goals, you could say. The technique for the first one is just ridiculous. The ball is running across the edge of the box, running across his body. He's coming at it at a kind of side-on angle, and he just wraps his left foot around it and just buries it in the bottom corner. Absolutely brilliant finish. The second one, again, great technique. The corner comes in, gets cleared out, catches it kind of half volley, and it sort of just takes a bounce and goes into the corner, same side. Great, two great goals. And for there, you're looking at it, you're going 23 minutes left. And at that point, as I said, the way we were playing from middle to front was just while at the back, the door was left open a little bit. I think whenever Hamsik went off, I think I know Diawara came on for Zielinski. I think it was about 70 odd minutes, and he was just kind of sitting in that kind of deeper role. Dries came on for Hamsik, it was, and then he obviously would go on to score the winner. So you can say, you know, Ancelotti using the squad very, very well, you know, dropping Diawara back in there to protect the back four, putting Dries up there, and then another great finish. Although,
I mean, ridiculous. It's not an easy finish. The ball, if you watch the replay, the ball bounces maybe like 5 or 10 feet in front of him twice, and it's a really tough finish. And I think that he maybe wasn't so sure of himself until the winner because it hits the side netting, and he's sort of watching it, not celebrating beforehand. And I was like, I don't think he knows if that's going in or not. But I think I'm going to take a minute here and just talk about Ancelotti and how well he did tactically today. You know, James just touched on it, you know, the changes that he made. And I think that the best part about it is that his hand was a little bit forced too, because Mario Rui had to come off the same time as he brought Diawara on. So we had to bring Luperto on in sort of an emergency-ish situation, which seemed anyway, because Rui was holding his hip. But, you know, we get one goal. He makes the change, changes shape to, it looked to me a little bit like a 4-2-3-1, but maybe it was a little bit more of a 4-4-2. And Mertens comes on and has really started to play between the lines. And no offense to Milan, but I don't think Bakayoko is a very good player. I think when he came on and Biglia came off, they lost a lot of the guile in the middle of the park. But Mertens came on and I thought he played brilliantly. He was linking up with Insigne really well. They overloaded that left-hand side. And then when Diawara came on, I thought he took control of the game really well. Diawara came on, he was only on for 20 minutes, and he was 23 of 25 passing and had two tackles. And he put that ball into Alan, who gets the assist on the game-winning goal. But in reality, Diawara puts that ball in over the top and really lets Alan into that part of the match. So I think Ancelotti really deserves some credit today. He did something we didn't see the past 3 years, and that was assessing a match in game and making changes with the players you have available and exploiting weaknesses in your team that you see from the bench. So it was very, very, very well done, in my opinion.
Answers here, guys. Do we win that match from 2-0 down with Sarri in charge?
I think we draw. I don't think we win.
It's not impossible. We came back from behind to win 8 times last season. So I don't know what he's trying to say that 2-0 is... I mean, okay, you know, we didn't come back from 2-0, but we had 8 come from behind wins. So, you know, I mean, I don't know. I think we could have. I just don't think that he believes that we could have. And that's a big, you know, that's a big, like, that raises a lot of eyebrows to, like what he was all about for us last season. It just confirms the fact, you know, his statement, I'm assuming, you're getting to, James, is what pretty much seals the deal on why we didn't win the Scudetto last year. You know, you can make a case for we didn't pick anybody up in January. You can make a case for... we just didn't have the right mentality, and you know, guidance and leadership is a major part, you know, a major factor in developing players to have that. You know, a lot of these guys haven't been in this role before, you know, in this sort of, like, you know, title chasing contention before. And, you know, if this was last year at 2-0, we might have come back to draw, like Kirsten said, 2-2.
I don't think I could have said it better than Rafa. I think what Rafa said was hit the nail on the head. I think the team could have come back to win, but I'm not sure if Sarri believed that we could have come back 2-0 to win. I think that's an important statement.
Oftentimes last season, when our backs were against the wall, we didn't produce. You know, notwithstanding the 8 come from behind wins, but... You know, the few losses or draws that we had were you know, with our backs against the wall, and especially in Europe. So, yeah, I don't think we come back to win last season. But like you said, Kenny, I agree with that too. We have the talent to have been able to, but we just don't do it.
See, I don't know about you guys, but I think the body language of the players looked entirely different. You know, how often last season, when things weren't going well, did you visibly see shoulders slump? You know, and just as if they didn't have any ideas, they didn't have any belief that they could, you know, go the full road and come back. Or, you know, we've seen this, you know, against Fiorentina. We go away, we're blown away, you know, lose a man and whatnot, and obviously that has an impact. But, you know, it's a case of what I've seen tonight was a team who just kept on going, kept to the game plan. You know, it's almost as if he has installed that extra bit of belief in there. Just keep doing what we're doing, we'll get there. And it's not nice to be shipping goals. I mean, three against in two games is not ideal. But, you know, it's a hard thing to teach a team, you know, to have yeah. that mentality to continue to come back. You know, at times we're not going to have to come back, and that's great. We'll win games comfortably throughout the course of the season. I've absolutely no doubt about that. But that's a hell of a kind of mental, you know, notch to have there. That you already, after two games, have shown that, we're behind. We'll just keep doing what we're doing. We'll just keep believing in what the manager's told us. We'll keep our chins up, keep the shoulders up, and just keep doing it, and the results will come. And in the last two games, they have.
So, yeah, and I think that an important part of that is that these are two good teams, not just two teams. These are two European
two projected level top
teams.
Six teams, yes.
Yes, two teams that finished in Europe last year and will probably finish in Europe against this year. Mm-hmm. And I think, I know Kirsten, I heard you chiming in. I'm just going to say one thing that Zielinski said, and then I'll leave it to you. But after the match today, he did an interview and they asked, do you feel like one of the starting 11? And I think his answer is very important. He said, this year we all feel important. Ancelotti said that the players will be used in the right way, and he will play the ones who are doing well at the times they're doing well. I'm happy to have contributed the last two games, but we have very good players that played and very good players that didn't play. And I'm just going to leave mine at that.
I think that is an excellent statement from him, but I've never been one to say this is about belief, because I don't think it's entirely bullshit, but I think that's putting too much on a simple thing. Not simple, but I guess what I want to say here is that it's not just that the players were keeping their heads up. I think it was them actually having already instilled not the belief that they could win, but the belief that Carlo is ready to change things and knows how to change things if they are not winning. So you see, it's just slightly different. Does that make sense?
That's a fair yep. point. Yeah. I think the reason why the mentality thing always comes up, and it'll always go back to that comment that was made last year that the Scudetto was lost in a hotel room in Florence. You know, it'll always go back to that, and I think that's where this kind of mentality thing constantly comes from. But that is a really good point, that these guys, you know, if Zielinski's already said that we have, you know, great players who did play and we have great players who didn't. So every guy who's on that park knows that they've got quality to come on and replace them if need be. And they don't see it as, not so much, well, I suppose they do see it as competition for places, because you should do. That's what, you know, makes players, you know, perform better. But again, that kind of trusting your teammates, and the manager that's on the bench now is not afraid to make changes. You know, I mean, I'm convinced if Carlo looks at something after 20 minutes and thinks it's not working, he's one of these guys that will just go, rip that game plan up, that's not working, change it. Rather than, you've got these managers, and we've all seen them, various clubs, and they get reputations for it, that, you know, 63 minutes on the clock every single week, that's your substitutions.
But that's he has that in his repertoire, where Sadi had one system, one style, one starting 11, what, you know, three subs, and the times that he would make, you know what I'm saying? Like there's no questioning his ability when everything is rolling and is, you know, going right. There's no questioning Sadi's, you know, brainchild, and there's no questioning his, you know, his smarts for the game that he knows. But that's the thing, is that that's all he knows. And with Ancelotti, we have so many more options. And like you said, James, you put it perfectly. Okay, 20 minutes, it's not working up. So here's what we're going to do now. This. Because I have this. And then if that doesn't work, I have another thing in another 20 minutes. You know? That's just... You can tell on the pitch. Like, I was, you know, after the first goal, it's like, all right, you know, whatever. It's one goal. We'll get him back. We're capable of doing it. Then the second goal really pissed me off, but it was only 4 minutes in the second half. And I remember saying to, you know, to one of my client, it was like, there's a whole entire half left here. I'm not worried yet.
Yeah. Lucky you. I was terrified.
No, I mean, you know, there's always that worry. You're like, there's always that worry, and I had it. I'm like, damn, we're going to lose these guys, and I got to go on two shows with Milan fans this weekend. Great.
And Milan don't even look good. That's even worse.
Exactly. Yeah, and Higuain's on the side. Great.
Oh, man.
Well, let's just have a special mention for him.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
I think the cheer that greeted him blazing that shot over the bar at 3-2 was probably as loud as any goal.
Oh yeah.
Yep. I also think that that was maybe the best part of the match, because I think when the ball rolls to him in the position he's in, in my mind I'm going, oh fuck. And then he blazes it. He blazes it way over, and a huge cheer comes out. And I think a couple minutes before that, Albiol slides into him and takes the ball away from him. And
it was one of those
huge challenges that takes him off of his feet, and it's clean. And I do wonder if Albiol just maybe whispered in his ear, like, gotcha, big guy.
it might have been a little bit more aggressive than that, but hey, I like the sentiment.
Albiol, lay off the McDonald's.
Well, I think it was one of those ones where, and again, I said this on the WhatsApp chat, I think it's there was definitely some needle in that tackle. There was some extra effort put into it. You know, he's won it clean, but he's made sure he took the man as well and left a little bit on him. I think there's definitely a little bit of afters in that. A little bit of revenge. Get it up, you big man. The amount of times that you've came back there with Juve and annoyed us and done your stupid gestures and pointed up to De Laurentiis, say, you weren't pointing at anybody this week, weren't you, you fat bastard? There you go. So, red flags. Anyway, I remember that, red flags. I mean, he's always staggering in the background. Oh my god, he done it. I'm sensing some red flags for Napoli. That's good, mate. Have you? Fantastic. Two games behind, came back to win. Get it round you. Dries Mertens then, guys. So, what kind of role have we seen for him this season? We touched on the goal he scored. Great winning goal. I think as well what you've seen was whenever Zielinski got that one back, there was a shot of Dries acting as a bit of a cheerleader. He's on the sidelines, geeing everybody on. And we've seen it again in the first game against Lazio when he was on the bench as well. He's out there kind of, again, fostering that whole kind of, you know, team group mentality. We've always had that, even under Sarri. We've always had that. You always seen players on the bench always getting really, really involved. But, I mean, after the 2 years that Dries has had, I think he would feel rightly aggrieved if he wanted to, that he's not in the side from the start. But then, Kenny, you were saying earlier on that you feel that perhaps he is better now. You know, he's a bit older, he's a year older. He doesn't have the burden of being the main goal scorer anymore. Milik is back in there. So do you see him being that kind of impact player, maybe reverting back to what he was in the early days of Sarri, you know, whenever he would come on as a sub to try and make a bit of a difference?
Yeah, I think Dries this season has come in. I think we all remember a couple years ago Dries being upset that he wasn't in the starting 11, scoring two goals. I believe it was against Empoli, the first match of the season, to draw us level.
Yep.
And he sort of just gave that death stare back to Sadi, like, remember me? I think you should be playing me. And I think fast forward 2 years, you know, league, you know, with Napoli, alone. I'm not counting the fact that he just played the whole way through the World Cup as well. You know, the guy's played close to 8,000 minutes in 2 years. So I think that those 2 years of heavy, heavy play and going to the World Cup and coming back to a team with a little bit more calm around it, I think he's happy to embrace the role as sort of the 12th man, you know, that super sub, whatever you want to call it. I think that what he offers us coming off the bench in matches in the, you know, 60th minute on really does give us something we haven't had the liberty of having the past couple of years. You know, he's someone who is familiar with the squad. He has really good relationships on the field with players like Insigne and Milik, which we've seen a couple of years ago. And I don't think we've really seen too much, you know, coming off the bench or when Mertens hasn't been a striker, of him and Insigne playing together. And I think that, you know, Dries is going to get a lot of freedom when he comes onto the pitch, and you saw it today. He was behind Milik. He was to the right of Milik. He was to the left of Milik. He was in front of Milik. He was able to just sort of rove around and just be someone who introduces the front three into play a little bit. And I think that it's a really valuable position. I think that we're going to see a lot of that from Simone Verde as well when he comes in as someone who has a little bit more freedom and movement on the pitch. And I think that you see Dries's enthusiasm on the bench, and I think that that's sort of that next level, and sort of hearkening back to what we're talking about with Ancelotti and his tactics and the way he changes things. I think maybe it's a burden lifted for some of these players who might be on the bench, that they don't have to worry about getting into games eventually, and that you won't be marginalized if you don't play in the first 11 every single week.
Yeah, you touched on him, you know, in his on the bench antics. I was actually kind of happy to see him argue so much from the bench, that foul that was called on Mario Rui.
I love, you know, that.
The one where Mr. Bertels said that Mario Rui didn't jump for the ball, so, you know, he's right to be called for the foul. Even though, even though Mr. And I forgot who it was from Milan, but he came up with a Triple H knee like right to his back.
Right in his back.
Yeah, so,
yeah.
Pjanic-esque from last season against Inter. But the foul goes on us, but whatever. So Mertens gets up and he's like, he was very visibly upset with the call. And, you know, I think he's a very good, and you know, James, we talked about this, you know, towards the end of last season and in the summertime, like who can be the guy to pick up the leadership role for the team, you know, aside from Hamsik, because the rumors were he was leaving. So who could it be? And I really think that Mertens is the one that can be that, you know, and not only. You know, the one thing I was happy with the commentary was when Mertens did score his goal, they called him a super sub, which is exactly what I used to refer to him as when he first came on board in the Benitez era. And, you know, he and Kenny took the words right out of my mouth as far as Mertens' versatility. You know, Verdi's not the only one that's versatile. Mertens is just as versatile as he is. And, you know, I mentioned this on, you know, Sempre, the Lost Files, this little thing we recorded that didn't get a chance to make air, commenting on the Lazio game. But I said that Mertens, I think, accepts the role that Milik is, you know, going to be the guy who starts. He's going to come off the bench more. Obviously, when Milik needs a rest, Mertens can get slotted into that position if need be, for Europe or for a cup competition. And I really believe that that's true, because Mertens had a perfect opportunity to say see you later this season. He wasn't very much a certainty either. And that's one of Napoli's strong suits from the Mercato, is that they were able to keep Callejon, who was supposed to go to Milan, whatever the case may be. If the reason why he didn't go is whatever, but we still kept him. Same with Mertens, same with Hamsik. I think everybody's convinced under Ancelotti that this is, you know, this is the way we're going forward, and everyone buys into his system. And that's how I feel about Mertens. And, you know, I think he can be the real leader on this team.
I'm just looking at this bench we had tonight. Just Unbelievable yeah. options.
And Fabian Ruiz wasn't even on the in the squad, so it's crazy. Know,
yeah, Mertens, Diawara, Luperto, Malqui, Verdi, Unas, Maksimovic, Kirikez, Rog.
Oh, you mean Raj? Raj.
Isn't that his accent kicking in there?
Raj. What is this, Lethal Weapon or something? Come on, Raj.
And Diarra. The you know, not Diawara, Diarra.
Oh my gosh. I think Rafa's having a go right now. That's at Mr. Bertles.
I think my favorite was Husai. I don't know what Jesus. You all are talking about. Husai is the best.
You mean Hisage?
Oh, did they really?
It's not Mr. Bertles I'm having to go at.
So bad.
There will be no red flags for my God.
Rafa has gone into full delirium mode. That's it.
He needs more sleep.
He does indeed.
Well, it's a mixture of exhaustion and happiness.
High. Yeah.
No.
I meant a natural high from the match.
Yeah, come natural on. High.
Because I got high. Yeah. La 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 la. Oh, you okay, Rafa?
I'm okay, guys.
Good stuff.
Sempre karaoke.
Yeah. I would just have a whole show based on that. Who wants to sing next?
Frank.
Well, you know, Frank. I'm the singer of the group.
That's Frank. True.
I think Frank would be happy with this was the type of Ancelotti match where I feel like when Frank watches the full match when he's out of Alpaca Land that he's really going to enjoy because this really had Ancelotti's stamp all over it. And I think that when he watches it, he's going to be mad and sad and upset that he wasn't on this episode.
I'm just thinking about Frank and alpacas. Like walking up to them and going, "Aren't you a lovely boy?"
Oh, Frank. We miss you, buddy. We really do.
I had a point and I forgot it thinking about Frank and alpacas. Thanks a lot.
I'm sure it'll come back to you.
What it was, okay.
There we go.
Really quickly, you said this is an Ancelotti match. Okay, what do you say then to the people who were turning around and saying once Ancelotti went back to the way Sarri was playing,
yes,
that's how we won.
Yes.
Besides a sigh.
The problem with playing the way that Sarri played is that I didn't really see us. We didn't play this game at all with one touch football and all of that. We still played this game way more vertically, and we played this game with a lot more midfielders and those types of players moving forward, as opposed to Sarri, who wouldn't. If we had played this whole match the way Sarri played, it would have been, I think it would have been a little bit more of a stalemate because I feel like we would have just beat our heads against the wall against a team that was sort of playing us with the press. We still high pressed the whole game. I'll share this on Twitter. I think I maybe already have, but the height of the line we played today was insane.
You did share it. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. You
it's
did
insane.
Share it. Yep.
And we still did. I feel like what Ancelotti's stamp, if I'm going to copyright that, I'm going to make a stamp, actually, and just have it around with me. And just
with an eyebrow on it?
Yeah, just the eyebrow. And I'm just going to start stamping random things. And when we win matches like this, I'll just make a short video of me just stamping things. But I think Ancelotti's stamp, I think that a player like Zielinski would have never had a game like this under Sarri because he is given, I wrote this down actually.
He wouldn't have started under Sarri.
Well, he probably wouldn't have started. But a big difference between Ancelotti and Sarri is that he gives his players more individual freedom with the ball, especially at their feet. We would have kicked the ball around and it would have looked awesome and we maybe would have gotten off to a better start. But Zielinski controlled this match in a lot of ways that he never would have been able to under Sarri. He was on the left, he was on the right. He was doing a lot, making a lot of technical individual moves that I thought I was thinking to myself while I was watching the match, like, wow, this never would have happened the last 2 years. I think that him and I think when Fabian Ruiz is healthy and plays are going to be the two most important pieces in the big picture of Ancelotti, because those are types of midfielders. And even it's funny because I feel like Hamsik, if he was playing in that Zielinski role, would have that ability as well. It's the one sort of ticking question mark I have, is how long are we going to go with the Hamsik experiment? But I do think that just the way he was able to change the way he played, I didn't feel like we ever played this match the way that Saudi plays. We were way more direct in our play and way more vertical, even to the end of the match. And I thought that under Saudi, we still would have just done what we've done the whole time.
Well,
hopefully that makes sense. But
yeah, under Saudi, Hamsik would have started in Zielinski role, I believe. And yes. And obviously Hamsik wasn't working out last season, but you know, he didn't really do much to. And I said it. How do you just replace the captain? You know, he should start Zielinski. He should start this person. He should leave Hamsik on the bench, chasing a Maradona record, but he won't because he's the captain. But he doesn't have the vision. Doesn't have the vision that Ancelotti does to move Hamsik out of that position and still keep him on the field. And you know, when he scored the two goals today, Zielinski, it made me really proud of the paragraph I wrote to who's going to have the bigger impact on Napoli this season that might not have been able to under Sarri. And I really do believe it's Zielinski, because he's younger, faster, hungrier, very highly rated in Europe as one of the top, in that position. And, you're right. Saudi wouldn't have been able to, because he just didn't have the vision to move Hamsik out of that position, or even to sit Hamsik, as controversial as it might have been, because you know how, you know, he was chasing the Maradona record last season.
I'm just looking at the run of events, you know, on soccerway.com. So Zielinski scores on 53, and then on 63 minutes, 4 minutes before Zielinski scores again, Mertens comes on for Hamsik. So technically we didn't win this game by playing Sarri's way, because that formation either changes to a 4-2-3-1, because if you take Hamsik out of there, then Zielinski and Alan are left as your two midfielders,
right?
And you've got Insigne, Mertens and Callejon with Milik ahead of them. Or did he move Alan in to sit and protect the defence, obviously, until Diawara came on for Zielinski 5 minutes after he scored, and then that allowed Zielinski the licence to move forward and get that second goal? So we started off with the 4-3-3 that we were all familiar with last season, but whenever you look at it, the timing of a substitution, it's like, okay, we got that goal back, let's change it. And the changes that he made were, I mean, there's a clear change of formation, because Dries Mertens was not sitting where Marek Hamsik was.
No, it was when I watched some replays back and I watched the highlights, it really looked like I put 4-2-3-1 down on my notes, but then when I watched it back right before we came on the air, it looked a little bit more like a 4-4-2. Because even Insigne and Callejon were starting just a little bit deeper and able to run into the game a little bit more instead of playing up higher and then coming back and moving inward. It was a really interesting thing to see. It was different from the Saudi 4-2-4 Hail Mary type situation.
Hail Mary.
Yeah, because I think there was thought in the substitutions. Not that Saudi wasn't thinking about his substitutions before the haters come in. Let me rephrase. There was acute thought by Ancelotti that Mertens would come on and then Diawara would come on next. And really, you would still have a deep-lying playmaker in Diawara, and then you would still have some guile with Alan. And I think it was really sort of a fluid 4-2-3-1 merging into a 4-4-2. And it was just interesting. Wow, we're talking a lot about tactics, which is really interesting, because I feel like we didn't as much before. We're just talking numbers. But It was really interesting to watch.
It's like that film, Mike Bassett, England manager. Today, Napoli will play 4-4-2. but no, great stuff. It is nice to actually be able to talk about, you know, the fact that we can see these different formations and, you know, it's not just the same kind of, as we referred to them last season, plug and play substitutions. You know, yeah. There's actual thought behind affecting the game in terms of changing the shape, a plan B, even a plan C, as Rafa touched on earlier. So it's all great stuff. But the final kind of topic to see us through, well over the hour, this will take us over the hour easily. The topic I have titled is SSC Napoli versus Naples, because this week has seen things hit kind of fever pitch, you could almost say, as I said in my intro, that I think both parties have more or less went to war with each other via the internet, at least. We've had the talk that the Magistris is siding with the Ultras, even talk not knowing if it's actually true or not. This was Darren that mentioned this to me on Facebook Messenger, that they've invited him to join them in the Curva and sing anti-ADL songs. Then you've had the Magistris has claimed that ADL hasn't put a single euro into the San Paolo. The argument, and that I agree with, is why should he? He doesn't own it. Fans have been unable to buy season tickets because the club are now leasing the ground on a game-by-game basis. And then Napoli themselves, as a club, have hit back at the council's claims and released a statement, and I've kind of picked out bits of it. It's absolutely mental, the stuff that's on this. But no, the club have hit back with a statement. It's not attributed to anybody. It just says, you know, that the club have released a statement. There's no doubt that De Laurentiis has had his you know, his mark on it. And it basically says there is only one person who leads repeated and offensive attacks on the city and Neapolitans. Unfortunately, that's the mayor, who, instead of trying to remedy the countless administrative disasters in his tenure, instead finds the time to argue with the president of SSC Napoli, finding time to wink at the so-called Curva B, which is engaged in, this is hard-hitting stuff, in delusional messages from some opaque fringe group which the club distances itself from, and which certainly does not represent the many good and correct fans who pack the stadium, including said Curva, to support the team. The mayor of Naples is engaging in a tried and tested technique, hiding the defaults, delays and omissions attributable to his mishandling, including the subject of the stadium. It is an attempt to shift focus and stir criticism of the club and its president, creating forced and artificial divisions that certainly do not include, amongst the objectives, the good of the team and its successes. The president of Napoli, and this is clear to anyone except those in bad faith, has not attacked the city and Neapolitans despite what the First Citizen may say. After all, why would he? The president, as is his right and indeed duty to protect the club, the city and Napoli fans, has repeatedly criticised bad administrative handling, especially when it comes to the stadium, which is in a state of humiliating degradation, creating huge damage to the image of the club and the city. And this is a bit that kind of that gets me as well. They move on to talk about, you know, whenever you're hosting big European teams, when it's necessary to host prestigious European teams accustomed to stadiums of absolute excellence, it is inevitable to feel a profound sense of shame about the condition of the municipal stadium. So, pretty much going back to what happened, the rush job to get things sorted for Real Madrid coming, so they weren't changing their socks in dressing rooms with puddles in them. Certain people had a go at me whenever I decided to use the word toilet to describe the stadium. Again, that's obviously words that ADL himself has used. It's, you know, a term more or less attributed to Marco whenever he was part of the team, whenever he went there on his honeymoon for two games and said some kind of shocking stories. There's certain people that don't want to move with the times. They see it as selling out to move to a new stadium. How often have Napoli fans been promised? And for us, it doesn't affect us because we don't go every week and we get that and we hold our hands up We don't pretend to be super fans. We never will do. It's not our place to do that. We are only talking from afar. But, you know, fans deserve to go and sit in a stadium that isn't crumbling round about them. The local council have proven with the speed in which they managed to relay that track after the criticisms that they got that they can do work quickly. So where the hell are the new seats that have been promised for 2 years? So it's a hell of a statement. Kenny, I'll come to you. What's your take on this? This is probably the lowest ebb in the relationship between both parties so far.
Yeah, and this, I mean, it's really embarrassing to have to talk about, honestly.
And it's a lot to digest too, Kenny, isn't it?
You know, I think that both sides have done poorly in taking this so publicly, and in the short term, the only people that it really affects are the fans and the people who have to go to the stadium every week.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's the worst part of it, I think, is that, you know, the fans are stuck in the place of suffering in a stadium that's not worthy of them. I'll say that. I think that De Magistris has come out and said that he's going to go to the Fiorentina match and sit in the Curva. I don't know if that's actually going to happen or not. But the Curva did also have a one-half protest today where there was no chants or singing, and the flags were furled in the stands. And I wrote a note about it saying that once the crowd came into the game and decided to end the protest in the second half, we ended up coming from behind and winning. So if they don't think that they're, you know, they know that they're important and it's important to the team, and the team, you know, secondarily suffers, the team being the players and the manager, not administrative people and not De Laurentiis specifically, but the players and the manager and that sort of, you know, tier of people are next because they haven't done anything wrong aside from play for the club, and they are stuck in the middle. I feel for a person like Ancelotti who comes in to the team in the middle of this and it just looks bad, doesn't make us look like a prestigious top 20 team or top 10 team or whatever, wherever you want to place us in Europe. I think ADL has to, and De Magistris have to come somewhere in the middle and, yes, and think about the people that it suffers, and not having season tickets is ridiculous.
Yeah, that's scandalous.
I think that the club and De Laurentiis have to be ones that answer for that, because they, at the end of the day, the club decided not to go to their annual meeting and sign the year lease, and that is on them. So, and worse for the club is that they have to, aside from the match to match lease, if they do that, they have to also pay 10% extra in whatever ticket sales they have as well. So it's not good for the club. It makes both ADL and De Magistris look petty, and it's disrespectful to the people who follow the club. And I'm just not gonna account into any sort of new stadium plans or any of that stuff, because we all know we need either full renovations of the San Paolo, and how that happens at this point is clear that if De Laurentiis and the club decide they want to stay at San Paolo, he's going to have to invest into it, whether we agree with that or not. This is the play they have to make. He's either got to invest money into it and negotiate how that works into the club's lease of the stadium, or they have to move to a different stadium. Whether that, you know, and that being different stadium being one that doesn't exist yet because it would have to be new. And where that goes, we don't know. The mayor of Melito has said that the Napoli city, quote unquote, is happy to go there, but they're not going to be able to build a new stadium there. So it would have to be the training ground and all that other stuff. So he's going to have to find somewhere else to put a stadium.
Well, and body exists, much, my friend. Body exists.
Well, that's a separate argument for a separate day. And I think that, I think that bringing body into it, I don't think that that is necessarily relevant to Napoli at this point. I think that Napoli is at such a superior level in financial investment and, you know, the amount of equity that, you know, sweat equity, if you will, that De Laurentiis has put into Napoli. Body is I think, an afterthought. They got to get out of Serie D before anyone can talk to me about Body. I just think that it's just, at this point, it's just embarrassing, and we have to, the club and the city have to put the egos aside, specifically De Laurentiis and De Magistris, and they need to come together and figure out a way forward, because any further, you know, splintering in the relationship is going to have us playing home games in Palermo. So that's where I'll leave that.
Well, I mentioned Body because we have Body Stadium that we can, you know, possibly move to.
No.
If talks break down. Well, not that it's a popular opinion, decision, or whatever, but it's an option. It's a realistic option, actually.
How realistic? How close is it?
I mean, it's on the other side, I believe, of the country.
I know where it is. I just wondered if you knew mileage-wise.
I can't tell you exactly how far, but I know
exact. Come on now.
I mean, it's an option because he's got full reins of that stadium. Look, you know, I visited São Paulo in 2005, first season in Serie C. Eddie Rey had just taken over the team. I met guys like Emanuele Calaio, Roberto Carlos Souza, Pia, you know, name them, Abate, Ignofo, Scarlato. These are the guys, Pier Paolo Marino. These are the guys I met and saw, and the game I went to, I was able to stand on the pitch and look up at the curva and walk down the steps Maradona came up and visit the locker rooms, which were shit. I mean, the place was heaven to me, because it was Stadio San Paolo, and it was the greatest day besides the day my kids were born of my entire life. Up until that point, it was the greatest day of my life, and then my kids were born. That was in 2005. We had just overcome bankruptcy. We had been in financial peril. We had been dwindling in Serie B. You know, and most stadiums in Italy were in the same shape that we were in. Granted, they might have done this, that, and the third to accommodate teams like Real Madrid, to get up to UEFA regulations here and there. They might now sell hot dogs in the stands. They might now sell official merchandise outside the stadium, or bootleg merchandise outside the stadium. What have you, whatever. The stadium has not, is not in good shape. It might be in UEFA shape, but it's not in good shape. And I might say this, and this might be a little controversial, but does something like Genoa Bridge have to happen for somebody to finally wake up and say, damn it, we should probably do something about São Paulo? Because, it right now is an issue where, okay, it's dirty, it's not comfortable, it's, you know, not modernized, but sooner or later it's going to become, okay, it's dangerous, you know? And I'm sorry, but the fact that the city is okay with changing the freaking track for a competition that doesn't exist until 2019, 2 weeks before the season starts, but can't lift a finger to help SSC Napoli is absolutely asinine, and it's unacceptable. And you know, I usually take De Laurentiis' side because of how I feel about him. I know, you know, he puts his foot in his mouth a lot of times and he says the wrong thing, and I always try to defend him. But at the same time, as much as I'm just fuming with anger at De Magistris, because, you know, I have family, friends, and loved ones that visit that stadium, and I have Kenny. You're going in October, and so is my cousin Dan. You know what I'm saying? And why can't we have the best experience when we go to the stadium, and not walk in and say, damn, you know, we're used to these stadiums here, and now we're gonna go to the stadium over there, and it's gonna be a shithole. and it's not fair. But at the same time, De Laurentiis has to make a move himself. And like you said, Kenny, you said it perfectly. Either fix the shit because it's now falling on us, and renegotiate maybe the ticket revenue money that comes in or whatever, however you want to renegotiate with the city, or go somewhere else and find a place. Okay, because, okay, Melito, it's not going to happen. Let's find another spot. We have to do it. It's got to happen. It falls on De Laurentiis as well. And I think if these two knuckleheads can just come together and figure it out, it's not that difficult. It's possible. Just you got two stubborn, hard-headed Italians, one Neapolitan, one Roman, who just can't get their shit straight. And it's us that's suffering.
Do y'all think, sorry, again, devil's advocate here, and I want to say I think that something needs to happen with the San Paolo, but we're definitely judging it from a North American and a European, a British perspective here. Yep. Yep. I've been to many stadiums in Italy, and let me tell you, they don't look better. I haven't been to Juventus or whatever the hell they're calling it right now. We're judging ourselves, it seems, right now on that standard. And I agree, that's where we need to be. But you also have to factor into it that there are maybe three countries in the world that have excellent stadiums. And Italy is not one of them. So we're not far behind Serie A and the rest of Italy, necessarily. We're far behind perhaps the shiny stadiums that either we visit in our home countries or we see on the television.
But could this be a problem with the infrastructure in the country? Because, you know, to bring up the bridge in Genova, the problems that lied with, you know, the issues that the bridge had were discovered before the accident happened, and not a damn thing was done to take care of it. And it's now a tragedy where we lost 36 lives, you know? And Kirsten, think that has a lot to do with the mentality of the people who are in charge in the country?
I would say, well, I'm not Italian. We should hear that by my voice and by my last name. So I don't want to speak for the Italian mentality, but I think in terms of the fact that most people there look around and they see that it's either compete against Juventus or compete against everyone else. That's just kind of the point that I'm trying to bring in. Obviously, I kind of agree with you with what you're saying with what happened in Genoa. But I'm not willing to, I guess, put myself in their shoes as much, if that makes sense.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And just to answer your earlier question there, Kirsten, as well, during that really engaging conversation, that was great listening, guys, just sitting back and taking all that in. 164 miles between Naples and Bari. Takes you 2 hours and 36 minutes to drive there. So
that seems like it might be a little...
A wee bit far. It's the opposite coastline. Yeah. Yeah, it's so.
It's supposed to be beautiful, though. So maybe a day trip, everyone.
I think my only other issue with what's going on is that I think that other teams are starting to make that movement. I know that Roma.
Oh,
is
absolutely.
Having,
yes. I just wanted sort to point of, that
Udine
out
too.
There.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, Udinese, I think, is the one thing the one team that I look at and I say to myself, you know what? If Udinese can do it, no disrespect to Udinese. But I feel like, as Napoli grow into a semi-permanent spot in general European football, that at some point we have to grow into it. Otherwise, eventually, we'll see ourselves fall behind. I think that Milan having to split the bill between two teams and the fact that they can do updates on the Miazza and Roma making something moves towards a new stadium and Udinese having talks of a new stadium. And I think Fiorentina are in talks to build a new stadium as well. Cagliari has a new stadium. Yeah. So I think that we need to move now before in 5 years we're still not collecting its in-stadium revenue, and then we are talking about potentially being slipping a little bit. And I think that that's the fear a lot of Napoli fans have on the,
and
on
it's
that
absolutely
end of
it. A fear of mine too. Sorry, I'm jumping back in here. I just want to say that I absolutely agree. I just wanted to throw out that other angle of
sure.
what current stadiums there look like now, not necessarily what we're moving toward.
Mm-hmm. No, that's an excellent point you made there, Kirsten, about the fact that we do look at it from a very, you could say, spoiled perspective. You know, we all see the stadiums that exist in the US for, you know, your NFL stadiums. You know, they're all, you know, gleaming, you know, monoliths of modern sport. You look at the stadiums that have been built for MLS clubs, I think, was it?
Immense.
Was it Atlanta City?
Atlanta is...
The stadium they demolished.
Blows my mind.
The stadium they demolished was insane to move into the new one, you know?
Yeah.
That stadium is ridiculous.
Yeah. And, I mean, here in Glasgow alone, now Hampden is not brilliant. They didn't do great renovation work on that, and the stands that are behind the goals are far too shallow, and again, there's a running track on that. And if you're in the front row of this, the bit behind the goals, you can't see a damn thing. But, I mean, obviously, we've got Ibrox and Parkhead, who are, you know, fantastic stadiums, amazing facilities, you know, nice and modern, nice new seats, you know, everything's all laid out for you, you know, best facilities you can think of to go and sit and watch a football match. And I think you are right in that we are very spoiled and we have a certain perspective in our minds of what to expect when we walk into a sporting arena. And it does kind of skew, you know, that mindset as well. So I thought that was a really, really good point. But that was really good listening, guys, just even sitting back taking that in. As I said, the only thing from the club statement that kind of, you know, irks me, and I do agree, Kenny, you're spot on what you said there about... It's a bit embarrassing. It's a bit like airing your dirty laundry in public. You know, it's just like there's no need. I mean, the statement is pretty, as I said, it was pretty hard-hitting. The only bit I didn't like, and I think it comes back to that point you made about whenever the Curva started singing, the team responded. You know, they are important. And then in the same statement, they more or less say that they call them an opaque fringe group, which the club distances itself from and which certainly does not represent the many good and correct fans who pack the stadium, including those that sit in the Curva. So I don't like that kind of, you know, isolating a segment of fans and kind of try to put, shine a light on them and say, you're not as good as these guys. I don't like that. I don't like categorising fans in that way. I don't like, you know, super fans and people that think they're above other fans and all that. So having the club sort of trying to do that as well, it's not nice to see.
I agree with you, James. I think it's a little immature from the club to come out and call them out. And, you know, I feel like it's an indirect jab at those who oppose the ideals of ADL. And, it's not a good look for a club to come out against even a portion of their fans, you know, and I agree with you there.
As Kenny said, something has to give. And I think, was it Rafa, you said, it's just two stubborn old guys that basically need to, you know, put their heads together and kind of try and come up with a solution. As you said, maybe it's a case of if ADL agrees to put X amount of money in to renovate the stadium, that he recoups some of it by retaining more of the ticket sales. I don't know. I mean, we can only sit here and surmise. I don't know what the split is. I don't know what the club get compared to the city. We've already found out through this kind of conversation that we're having to pay 10% more because we're leasing it on a... a match-by-match basis. Fans not being able to buy season tickets for their own club is absolutely ridiculous, especially for a top flight. I'm sorry, that's just, and that is all on ADL. He made that call. So I think these guys just need to kind of put their heads together and come up with something. It's just, it's not ideal. And there's other stuff in this as well. I mean, the full statements on Football Italia, I just scrolled down there and I seen something about, you know, the term real fans is used in inverted commas as well. It's just, it's not stuff you want to see. That should be done behind closed doors. I'll put the link up on our Twitter page if you want to see the full statement. If you haven't done so already, it says it's on Football Italia. We'll put that out for you. But no, that was great stuff, guys. That wraps us up for the first episode of season three. Season three? Where's that, Kate? Where's that come from?
I have a friend who started a podcast with a friend of his, who's from Saratoga Springs here where I'm at now, and he moved out to LA. He's back in town for weddings, so today we did his mom and his bride to be trial runs for their, you know, hairstyles, and was talking to his mother a bit. And it, that, you know, you say season three like that because he, you know, we talked about his new podcast and how I'm going to shout him out, Alex Granja K. I don't remember his exact Twitter handle, but at Granji something. The show's called Yesterday's Paper. It's really cool. I like the show. I like how he seems like he's a natural. But anyway, I was talking to his mom and she was asking me, you know, things about our podcast that we do here, and I'm thinking to myself, yeah, no, we're on our third season, and it hit me today too. It was like, wow, I can't believe we've been doing this. This is three seasons. We've been doing this for 2 years almost now. This is incredible.
July 24th, 2016. Yeah, we started years, this, yeah. Over 2 years. Yep, yeah, mental.
It's all pretty new to me.
Almost two for me. I didn't get started until December. Yeah.
You'll have your war wounds soon enough. That's fine. We'll pick up some scars on this show. We just try and brush it off and get on with it. But no, it's been great fun. Few ups and few downs, but hey, we're still here doing it. Absolutely insane to think we're on season three. Mental. But long may it continue. So you can find us on Twitter at Sempre SSC Napoli. Head over to the website SempreSSCNapoli.com. Kenny and the contributor teams over there doing excellent work as always. Lots of great articles, bespoke opinion pieces, and even recently a poem.
Alright,
Eric, Mr. Eric, he deserves a little bit of a shout out. Eric, I'm sure you're going to be listening, but you all should check him out. All of his stuff, I know he links to it on his Twitter at EricPass75, and he is already blowing up my inbox right now for stuff from this game today. So, Eric, thank you. So I just wanted to make sure we gave him a little bit of a shout out because I think he deserves it. So again, thanks, Eric.
And
absolutely.
And kudos to Frank as well for approaching him. You know. It was
Frank's out there handing out proverbial flyers.
Yeah, pretty much.
Thank you, Frank.
And the funny thing about Eric is whenever I spoke to him as well, because he was asking how to submit his pieces, and I was replying to him from the Sempre account, and he was saying, oh, I'll send something on to Kenny. I mean, I don't know if it'll be any good. You can have a look at it and let me know what you think. And then the first
He's playing coy.
Yeah, the first piece came in and we were like, what the fuck?
Brilliant. Yes.
Keep going, Eric.
Yeah, great stuff. And to all the contributors, we've had some, you know, people that wrote for us last season, not heard much from you as well. You know who you are. Reach out. You want to write something, you know where to find us. But no, definitely, guys, check out the website, as I said, SempreSSCNapoli.com. Loads of great reading on there. I mean, you can skim through that while you're listening to us. You know, you get in your ears and in your eyes. It's just everywhere, everywhere.
In your eyes.
Jesus Christ.
We're back.
We're back to karaoke. Right, we're going to buzz off now and let Rafa get some sleep. So we will be back next week. Sampdoria away awaits us. Another evening kickoff. I believe that's on the Sunday.
Yes, Sunday.
So we'll be a slight mix up in the recording days. We will be back next Sunday as opposed to Saturday. Until next time, guys, thanks for listening. Take care. Ciao ragazzi. Forza Napoli.